Hey, welcome to another episode of the Nui Tech People Community Spotlight. This week, we've got a few members of the Harter Hunter Data Analytics Meetup. So we've got Josh Peake, we've got Aiden Price, and we've got Steph. Thanks for coming on, everyone.
No worries.
Thank you.
I think the best or the easiest point to start with, just introducing one another. So first of all, we'll start with Josh. Josh, who are you? What do you do? Where do you work? What's the deal?
I'm Josh Peake, data scientist and data engineer. I have a very extensive software engineering background. I work for a company called CloudSense. We do cloud integrations with Salesforce. I do a lot of back-end data engineering and working on some of the interesting recommendation engines that are coming with that.
Cool. And I'd say it's probably a pretty good time. We've had Josh on the podcast with James McDonald before. That I think was episode 19 from memory. Definitely worth a watch, and we'll chuck that link in the description as well. Aiden, hey, what do you do?
Hi, everybody. So I'm Aiden Price. I'm a data engineer with Centennial. The history is that I'm a reformed coal geologist. Spent many years chasing drill rigs around the bush. But nowadays I'm a Python person. Particularly in geospatial data, but I've landed in machinery data at Centennial. I've always enjoyed just looking at data and complex data flows, but especially data that has a very specific relationship to the real world. I've often said that if I had to analyze Facebook likes, I'd go crazy pretty quickly. But that's one of the reasons why I'm particularly interested in satellite remote sensing data or IoT data, because it relates to the real world, something that I can see and touch.
Sure. So your background's, fairly heavily in geology. So I'm assuming the relationship is physical world. Yeah. Hmm. Awesome.
Earth science systems are amazingly complex and very interesting.
Unreal. And Steph, last but not least.
So Steph Carla, I'm a data analyst. I'm starting a new job on Monday. So I think that's what I'm officially doing at the moment, as a business analyst at Westrack. So that will be the business analyst that analyzes business, not the business analyst that does ERP. And I kind of fell into data analytics accidentally, which was great because I'm actually an accountant who got very bored being an accountant in the industry. Then got very lucky and got a graduate role with a transport logistics company, rotating through the sales department. Somebody was using Excel and I was like, oh, that's why we use it. amazing. So yeah, not just using Excel to add up numbers, but using Excel to analyze, which was an aspect of accounting I always loved. And so, yeah, it just took off from there. I kind of forced my way in.
Excellent. And how are we all coping with social isolation, working from home exclusively, that sort of thing? I guess the easiest way to do this, again, we'll do sort of the round robin format for now. So Josh, first of all.
Yeah, well, our company has had like work remotely on demand already. So it's like we've already been set up for that. And a lot of my team is in other countries anyhow. So we're working with different time zones. So the transition has been pretty easy. The hardest part is that not being allowed out, trying to cope with that. So a lot of my high school friends that live in other states, we've been doing virtual bars every fortnight. So it's like actually on the start of this call, we had some like shenanigan virtual backgrounds going on from what I last called my mates. So that's been good that I've actually been able to catch up with my friends a lot more. And with them being parents, they can sort of jump on the call, have a few drinks. If they've need to go to see their kids, they can just mute and go and deal with it. So it's like, we can have a few drinks and not worry about how do we get home because we're already home. So that's been a nice positive that's come out of it.
Absolutely. And Aiden?
I can get used to this working from home thing. The coffee here is much better than it is at work. And I don't have to go so far in the car. And I'm a bit of your classic nerd anyway. So being trapped at home isn't such a big deal to me.
All right. And Steph?
I am a classic extrovert, as no one will be surprised here. So I've just taken it as an opportunity to focus on what I like to do in an introverted way. So there's been a lot of craft and a lot of cleaning. but I have also been really enjoying just finding the wholesome aspects of this whole thing. Like, one of the funniest ones, I think, is seeing teenagers go on bike rides with their parents because you don't see that otherwise. And that's been pretty fun.
Also
going on bear hunts in the local suburb with my dog, where everyone's little teddy bears out and about.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, absolutely.
I have been enjoying that.
Yes. This is a good segue to... Really, everyone's been, I guess, discussing the negative components of this whole pandemic. I always try to make lemonade out of lemons. Any positives you're finding from this situation, Josh?
As I mentioned, I've actually been like more socially connected to people that I previously haven't stayed in touch with. So the fact that it's forced everyone to make more effort to connect, we're not sort of caught up in the business of life. We actually stop and intentionally connect with each other. I think that's what the meetup was kind of trying to do. Anyhow, we had a place to intentionally meet up, but it's like I've been doing it with a lot of my closer friends that I've kind of let drift off a little bit. So sort of going back and reevaluating those relationships and making a bit more of an effort. So that's been really nice.
Absolutely. And Aiden, better coffee, less commute?
But also it's forcing me to invest in the home office.
Yeah.
And it's always been one of those dreams of, it'd be great if I had a home office and a workspace that I could really, you know, be productive in. Mm. And then bang, all of a sudden you really have to have that. And so all those things that were just dreams are now something that you actually have to push for and pay for and do now.
I ordered a chair probably mid-March, we'll say, just as, you know, the lockdown really started to kick on. And the shipping time was estimated when I ordered to be 3 to 5 days from Sydney. Thought, mm-hmm. you know, that's a reasonable time frame. We're recording this on the 30th of April. I've had the chair for a week. So a 3 to 5 day blew out to well over a month. So I think everyone sort of had that panic of, we really need to get... Yeah, a full ergonomic setup happening really quickly. And the demand just skyrocketed. The supply wasn't there yet. And it was just a bit of a mess. But like you said, yeah, now I have the stuff. Now I can actually set up a decent space. Yeah, it's excellent. Excellent. Anyway, look, we've covered, I guess, the tokenistic COVID questioning that I think every internet publication has covered since mid-March. Let's talk about Hunter Data Analytics. Really, in a nutshell, elevated pitch, what is Hunter Data Analytics?
So I'm going to, the phrase that we got from our meetup page, it's we are a monthly meetup that welcomes all ages, skill levels, and backgrounds of the data community in Newcastle and Hunter region. We are trying to build a inclusive community. So that's why it's like all skill levels, all ages, no matter what your background, it's like, as long as you have, a good attitude and sense of curiosity, like, please come along. So what we do is a little bit of knowledge sharing, a little bit of socializing, networking, and it actually is a little bit of a careers expo. I had someone come up to me at one of our more recent meetups saying, hey, by the way, I actually landed a job because I went to one of your meetups. The presenter was talking to me and afterwards I said, I'm looking for work. What you're doing is kind of interesting. And then 3 or 4 weeks later, he's working for them. So it's like, that's kind of cool.
That's a pretty big success story. Absolutely. That's unreal. And
something I wish I could have told my student self to go to a meetup and start the networking early.
Yeah, there's no shortage of those sorts of conversations in my line of work. I'll interview a lot of junior candidates. And the questioning is always, you know, they're maybe year three of comp sci. They see the light at the end of the tunnel. They know they're about to, you know, be thrown into the wide world. They don't have a really strong network. How do I build it over the next year? And that's the key takeaway. Just get out to the industry events as much as humanly possible, because that's where you will build real connections. And I guess to that point of having an inclusive community, trying to really open the arms to anyone with an interest in the community. Really, it's a meetup for people within the data community. What does that look like? Who is the data community, I guess?
That's a pretty broad question, since we've got, I think, 8 regular organizers, but you're seeing 3 of us today, but we have quite a spectrum of backgrounds, as you've heard. So that is kind of the data community we've got. So I think Steph's studying a master's of data science at the moment. Mm-hmm. So she's coming from like a business intelligence background, but also doing career change and studying. Aiden's coming from like a coal and geological space. I'm coming from like a pure software engineering sort of background. So just the 3 of us kind of represents a bit of that slice of demographic of, mm-hmm. and we even have people that are academics. The university has a freelance statistics department I didn't know about until people from there started showing up to events. So it's kind of interesting. The third Thursday of every month, we have a bunch of statistics and data nerds rocking up and talking about that sort of stuff. So yeah, it's quite a wide spectrum from anyone that's, I'm interested, I'm learning about it, or I want to do a career change, or I've been in it for a while, or if you don't want to do it professionally, you just have like a hobby interest in it as well, and I want to hear from like-minded people.
Not to bring up the big C word again, but I think that after COVID, people will really appreciate what graphs can do. Mm. I mean, the number of times I've heard the curve. and so I'm also kind of hoping that from this and data and statistics getting out there and what we can do with it and why it's good and why it's helpful, not why it's scary, will also be bringing anybody in. So anybody with an interest in data and what it can do, not even necessarily in the field, like Josh was saying.
Absolutely.
There's always been a huge undercurrent of hidden data people around Newcastle. Industry's always employed them, and they've shoved them in the furthest corner of the office so that they don't disturb everyone else. But there's heaps of different people and different roles, and particularly engineers, audio engineers or construction engineers, architects. They've all got huge piles of data, but they've never really heard, you know, other people talk about their data either. So they're all specific little experts like I was in geological data. And they've never known a community about data. There's been a community of geologists that they belong to, or a community of engineers that they belong to, but not a broader data community where we can share best practices in Python or best practices in data storage, or, hey, have you heard about this new package? Or there's a great new database technology on AWS. These sharing just in general data terms is helpful for all these people who didn't realize there was a data community.
And Aiden, to that point, there's also people that don't identify as a data person, because I've got a friend that's an architect. He doesn't identify as a data person, but he was showing me how he's doing all this Python scripting to generate and simulate architectural designs, where it just randomly generates designs and then figures out what would be the least materials but maximum structural integrity. And it's like, he's doing all these like generative algorithms. It's like, you're essentially doing machine learning for architectural designs. He's like, but I'm not a data person. I'm like, I beg to differ.
So there's always been big data people. I mean, big data is a bit of out of fashion term now, but GIS people have always had data that's been too big to fit in one machine's memory. And that's been the case for 20 years. Data engineering has been a thing in the spatial data community for 20 years, which haven't called it that. It's just been ETL.
Absolutely. And I guess this is probably a good segue to the question of why did HDA start? Now, what was the pressing need for this sort of thing? And we've to an extent touched upon the benefits of having a community and having a sounding board for this sort of thing. But I mean, Josh, my understanding is you were sort of one of the founding fathers of HDA. What was the push?
So like Aiden said, we've all been like put in the corner, like so no one would get disturbed by us. And then we've risen up and revolted, saying, no, won't stick us in the corner. but all the data meetups were down in Sydney. And it's like, that's a bit of a hike if we want to go find our community, our people. And I was organizing the Newcastle JavaScript meetup at the time. And I just heard a lot of people saying that, oh, it'd be good if there was like a data related meetup, something to like a bit more focus. I've heard a lot of people like mentioning it. And then end of 2018, I started my job at Komatsu, and my boss at the time was saying, like lamenting the same sort of thing, that there aren't really any data meetups and you wanted to start one. And I'm like, well, I already organized one. It's not that hard. It is hard, but it's not that hard. So like, all right, let's just have a look around, see if there are anyone. Didn't see any. And then the start of 2019, we kicked it off. And then by February, we found that there actually was another data meetup called Hunter Information Analytics Forum. They weren't on Meetup or didn't really have a web presence. But then after we started, they had a Meetup presence. So they've been running for about 6 months.
Okay.
Jody Stapleton and Jared Crow, I think, were the organizers of that. So around July last year, we actually merged the two. So it was Newcastle Data Analytics and Hunter Information Forum. So now we're Hunter Data Analytics. So combined forces and combined membership. So at the time, we also got feedback that our venue out in the back of engineering in the university was not a favored location. So we moved to the new space building in the middle of town, better parking, better lighting, and better access. But here we are. We're going to be transitioning again to a digital format next month.
You can't really get more convenient than not leaving your house. So I guess there's a pretty good benefit there.
The upside is we don't have to organize food and beverages, but then the bad side is I don't get free food and beverage.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there are swings and roundabouts to it, but I dare say there's probably a greater choice of food and beverages at your house, so you can look at it from that perspective as well.
Yeah. So to circle back to the question, we saw a need, and there's been a huge response of people that want this sort of space. So we just sort of said, hey, this place and time, and we've just been a magnet for like-minded people to come together and share their stories.
Unreal. And I guess to that point, my experiences with the meetup is that there's a pretty diverse range of attendance as far as industries, as far as career paths, that sort of thing. What's the organizer's understanding as to who is the typical attendee is? Who normally shows up to an event?
I might pass over to Aiden and Steph to answer this one.
There's normally a bit of a core of people who identify or self-identify as data people. But the audience does shift depending on the topic a lot. I've noticed over the months that I've been part of the organizing team that depending on the topic, we'll get a different set of engineers who have seen something on LinkedIn about this and they wanted to come. So when we had to talk about medical data, we got different people as compared to when we had to talk about mining engineering data. And so there's, as I was talking about before, those sort of hidden in the corner data people do look at LinkedIn and they do have social networks and, ooh, here's an event that it sounds interesting on the surface to me. And we do get this sort of peripheral audience that comes and goes and shows that there is still a lot of people hidden underneath the surface around town.
Excellent. Yeah, meetups, generally speaking, are always trying to attract new people, new perspectives that mightn't have considered attending, mightn't have considered contributing. HDA, who is that person? Who do you want to be there and contribute that probably isn't there at the moment?
I was just thinking, I have no idea of a specific person. I mean, the way I think about it, and what I'm really keen on with this group is that anybody and everyone I feel is welcome. I've never felt like I'm the token female in the room, you know, things like that. But I think we did have a discussion about making things a little bit more accessible to just people who are interested in data, not necessarily people who have done, what is it, computer science at uni, that type of thing. You know, more people, dare I say, like myself, who were kind of like, I like these numbers. I like that we're picking things out of them. You know, so people, I would say people who aren't necessarily, as we keep referring to, identifying as a data person, if we found topics and things like that, that they would, that stereotypical data people aren't interested in, and then they come along just, you know, because they have an interest in how the council's using the data or things like that. And then they, with that little toe in the water, they get excited and interested in the world of data and come along more events. Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%. Absolutely. Excellent.
In a nutshell, we're not picky.
Please show up.
Yeah.
We alluded to previously, obviously the C word is still up and running and still causing havoc on the Newcastle meetup community. HGA is going to move to a virtual setting on the, I believe, 21st of May. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Correct.
Look at me go. How's that meetup going to work? My understanding is that it's going to be a bit differently structured to the in-person meetups.
So
yeah.
Steph kind of gave me the nudge, and it's actually a little bit of a result of Richard on the last community spotlight saying, hey, if you have an event, please keep it running. I'm like, fine, he's giving me the nudge. Yeah, okay, let's do it. So I'm having a chat to Steph, and she's like, the thing that we thought we missed the most was the social and the networking, and less about the chalk and talk, like webinar style, where it's like, how do we just get people talking to each other again? So when we've had speakers come on, we've kind of encouraged them to do half an hour of content, and that actually fills up an hour anyhow, because if we get them to present 15 minutes and then ask questions, we'll wind up having 15 minutes of questions, and then another 15 minutes condense 15 minutes of questions. So we're setting the bar very low for their first online one, and we don't want to have our expectations too high. It's going to be a high quality event. We just want people to come and talk. So we're thinking of doing like a little 5-minute bring your own data project, or a thing that interests you, and talk about it for 5 minutes, and then we'll open it up for questions. And I think the hard part with, because we're going to use a platform called Jitsi, where it's just, we can give people the link and they're on. They don't need to install anything, the least amount of friction just to get on, web camera, audio, let's talk. We can share screens if we want to like demonstrate something. So I was thinking of, with all the COVID graphs, there's one in particular that I really like. So I was just going to spend 5 minutes and talking through what that graph means and how to read it. So a little bit of data literacy. So talk about it for 5 minutes and then questions. So when the questions run out, it's like, all right, next person, who's got something they want to share and talk about, and then we'll just kind of like do a bit of a round table and have that sort of format, which I think is going to be better suited for the medium, where if you're in a room, you can break off to different circles and have like little chats, but being all in the one room, it's a bit hard to have those sub chats in this medium. So I think if we do the short show and tell format, that way it's like a lot of people can like listen into little conversations, but they're not so long that you're like
Do prospective speakers, do they have to sign up beforehand, or are they able to just show up on the day and go, hey, I'd like to talk for 5 minutes?
We're pretty much going to ask on the day, like, hey, bring something. So it could just be me talking for 5 minutes, and then we had some questions, and then we're done after half an hour. So I'm hopeful at this point.
Look, we'll see. Either way, at a bare minimum, 5 minutes of Josh Peake. That's the takeaway.
Yeah,
that's what we can promise.
That's the pull.
Excellent. The thing is, we have no idea. This is new territory for us, so we're going to just like put our toe in the water and see what happens and get feedback. That's kind of one of our favorite cheeky things about this meetup, is each time we have a meetup, that's like a data collection point to get feedback from the community. So we keep evolving the community based on community feedback.
Yeah.
The whole meetup is a cheeky stats project for me.
That was my very first Hunter Data Analytics meetup last year. I cackled so hard when, I hope I'm not spoiling a something, but when you're first in the Hunter Data Analytics meetup and they do the, this is a fire exit, etc. And it's also, and this is the number of people that turned up. This is the number of people who RSVP'd, and this is it on a historical, you know, date trend. Hmm. And I was like, oh, only Hunter Data Analytics kind of meetup groups would grasp that and be like, and here are the steps.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's always interesting to look at that, because you can try and sort of extrapolate, you know, how far away a meetup was advertised and planned. You can try and generalize, you know, what discussion topics are of more interest to people. Yeah, there's a lot that you can pull just from that level of data. So, I mean, I completely understand. Awesome. So stepping away from, I guess, the meetup component and looking more at, you know, data analytics, science, engineering, just all of the terms that really make up this space. Every man and their dog for the past, you know, 5, 10, honestly, probably 15 years is saying data's the new oil, data's this, data's that. And it's just the default answer at this point when someone asks what's going to be the next big thing in tech, it's data, machine learning, AI, you know, they'll throw those sorts of terms out. What are your thoughts on that whole piece?
I'm going to start by being the negative Nancy here and saying data is the new oil as much as it's not rubbish in, rubbish out. As a data analyst, I get such a thrill from sensor data, anything that a machine has captured for data-wise, because humans at the moment, not great at bringing data together, answering things correctly, answering things at all. You know, so data is the new oil as much as it is, oh, this is going to be bad because I'm putting oil and clean in the same sentence, but as much as the data is as much the new oil as it is clean. It has such great potential, but we also need to take heed of the fact that there are still people, and I'd say a lot of people, more than this little group would think, that are walking around being like, but pen and paper is excellent. Yeah. Anyway, so I'll get off my high horse now. Anyone else?
You can take that metaphor and run with it, because there are hidden seams of data in every business and every organization.
Oh, I like it. Yeah.
Yeah, there's nice. There's data hidden away there that someone's been curating for the last 10 years, and they've been dedicated to their Excel spreadsheet, or, you know, they've kept the photos from the site every day for the last 20 years. There's hidden pockets of data yet to be found and yet to be tapped into. And the way that they relate to each other, there's still business value to be gotten from all those things.
It's almost
So I was going to say, I agree with all those. I was going to say that it's also kind of come in waves, where 2008 was when iPhone was launched. So we've got everyone with like high quality computers and sensors in their pockets. So there's been this like mass of new, like commercially, not industrially available data. So it's like there's been more industries that have been exposed to just, all right, it doesn't cost as much to get a lot of samples anymore. So we can do quite high quality statistical tests because we've got a lot of samples, so we can filter out noise. But that's when there was that 2012, it's like Harvard Business Review saying like data scientists are the sexiest profession of the 20th century. It's like it just spiked from there, the amount of people that wanted to learn that. But then it's like, all right, you've learned stats, you're doing these AI and machine learning. That was the next wave. All right, you've got the data, now you can model it. But then I'm seeing there's a surge of like data engineering. It's like, well, cool model, how do you deploy it? And a lot of these cloud platforms has kind of been like that 2010 to 2020, like the growth of Azure, AWS, and Google Cloud Platform, the ease that we can sort of start building and innovating new products and businesses have kind of expanded around this idea that, all right, what's the data? We can model it and then commercialize that, try to get that whole pipeline going. But then what I'm seeing is the more recent wave is like, oh, data is an asset. I want to steal that. So cybersecurity has become the next thing. It's like, oh, that's a nice house. I see you didn't put any locks on it. Excellent.
It's I guess, an especially pertinent topic at the moment, considering everyone's debate on the Australian government COVID safe app. It's been a big discussion on essentially what data is collected and how that is being utilized. And then the immediate discussion after is, okay, you have that data. What are you doing with it? So yeah, that natural progression from I guess the data space and just, you know, gathering the data and being able to utilize it to, okay, this is an asset that is of significant value to, you know, most organizations at this point, with any sort of data capability. How do we protect it? How do we safeguard it? And it's, I mean, that's a discussion that I had, another convenient plug, a discussion I had with Andrew Stace on the first Community Spotlight. So if you want to watch that one, we'll throw that one in the description as well. Look at us go. We're like a real podcast. one thing I've really noticed with the attendees of Hunter's Data Analytics, and we've already alluded to this, there isn't really the archetypical attendee. People with massively diverse backgrounds, with massively diverse levels of experience. I mean, the three people I'm on this call with at the moment are really testament to that. You've all done different degrees. You've all worked within different organizations, different roles. And you've all sort of fallen into roughly the same bucket. I always get the question in my line of work, how do I break into this? How do I get into data science? How do I become a data analyst? What's the pathway? And I guess for three people in front of me that have really, I guess, forged their own pathway, what's your opinion on, I guess, the default pathway for someone wanting to break into the space?
I reckon I should go last here because I put my hand up and I don't know if that's setting anything off. but I reckon I'm going to be the most wild card of how you should break into it. So you guys take the floor.
I beg to differ, Steph, because I think there is no default path at the moment. That's why I see people coming from so many paths, because it's such a new area. Like, data's been around for a while, but to be its own specialty in the way that it is, it's new. And that's why you've got all these cow paths of people like wearing their way into the field from very different directions. So there is no default way. So it's like, if I want to give advice for someone on how to get in, try as many paths as possible, because there's a lot of entries to get in. But that also means there isn't like, here is the one gate to get in, because that might be blocked for you and you need to try this door. So what door works for each person is going to be different. So that's kind of the hard part as well.
And the talk about, you know, do you have to have a computer science degree to get into it? I'd discourage anyone from just doing comp sci when there's lots of other really diverse fields that need people who can think logically and can turn a process into an automation, and still be related directly to your other interests in your life. Earth science is a passion of mine, and there's no reason to just forget about that and go and become a software engineer. But I do encourage people to do continuous learning, and especially tertiary education is really great. Doesn't matter what it's in, just keep learning.
Yeah. I'd say that if anybody told me when I was at uni, Steph, you can be a data analyst, I mean, I wouldn't know what that is. I would say, no, I'm not. I'm going to be a hardcore audit accountant person. So with saying that, I'm saying I got in the most random way, just by serendipitously seeing how it can be used in sales. To be blunt, making more money. I would say anybody who wants to get into it, just be super enthusiastic and continue down the path that you are most excited by. And that can sound strange, but and this is going to sound even stranger, slightly off topic. Have you guys a children's TV show that I used to love? Was called The Big Nights. It's by the same people who did Peppa Pig, but this is like way back. And the intro to The Big Nights was, this is Sir Boris, the best knight in the world, and this is Sir Horace, not the best knight in the world, but the most enthusiastic. And I feel like that is the description of who I am. I am not the best knight in the world, but I've always been the most enthusiastic. And I've just gotten on board with anything that looks good. And that's how I wound up being an analyst. And I'd say, just be the most enthusiastic. Follow the thing that makes you the most enthusiastic. Don't go down the path of, oh, but they said that if I want to do this, then I need to have this. No. You don't have to, don't think like that. You need to have qualifications, but you don't need to go down any set, like you were saying, Aiden, the computer science degrees. Just go with what you like.
I'm going to back up this the horror story, because I was a mobile developer, so working on iOS, and I was doing a fair bit of like the visual design for ages, and I was like, kill me, just pushing pixels. But then I got super interested in how to do the embedded database in the app and how to synchronize that with the server. So because I was channeling my Sir Horace and being super enthusiastic about the data side of it, a lot of people are like, data, I don't want to deal with that. Josh can do it. And it's like, they just gave me all this super interesting work. It's like, I loved it. And just, to me, it was like a form of play as well. So I really enjoyed that.
Excellent. And I mean, you know, summarizing, for the sake of summarizing, don't need to do pure comp sci. Follow the path that's interesting to you. Don't stop following a path. Just keep learning, keep picking up skills, and be enthusiastic about it. And generally speaking, you'll come out the other end with something useful. Go ahead.
And for the sake of not rambling, but rambling, another one is that I would like to tell everybody in the world that no matter where you are, if you've got a retail job while you're studying, or if you're in a graduate role and you think that nobody is listening, keep looking at ways to innovate, because that's what I did. I took on a whole range of things that my graduate program was like, we just put everything in the bin, you know? And so what I did was I analyzed recycling, I analyzed the cost. Nobody asked me to do that. I had a bit of extra time. So don't think just because you're in a role where all you're doing is serving people at your local supermarket that you can't think of new ways to do things better and bring them up in interviews, because that's how I got here.
Nice.
Ramble over.
it's a recurring theme in that I think people that really they take the initiative, you know, I don't want to use the cliche of 110%, but the people that dive just a little bit deeper, poke just a little bit harder, will generally fall into something where it has a massive business value. Like you're saying, the recycling piece, that's something that people would have looked at and just gone, oh, that's just how we've done it. That's okay. Yeah. But because you were the sort of person to, you know, just go, hey, wait a minute. You know, I've got a few hours spare. What can we do here? It can yield massive, massive results.
And even if it doesn't get taken up by the business, if it's a good idea, just bring it up in an interview anyway. Because you can say, what was a challenge? You know, that type of thing. Just keep on nothing. Doing things is never for nothing.
Because that whole innovation piece that Steph just mentioned about the analyzing the rubbish versus recycling, that's kind of why we use the data as the new oil metaphor. Because like oil by itself, it's like, well, it's just this dirty liquid. But when you go through a refinement process, that is fuel. So you can take this same of raw material, the data, and once you convert it into a number that someone can see value in, the company can commercialize that. Oh, hey, this data is turning into dollars. That's where companies can see the value. And if they can see that you can do that by looking at things that don't look like they're of value and turn it into value, you're suddenly a very valuable candidate. So it's like they mm-hmm. want data people like that with that curiosity and enthusiasm, which is a dangerous combo.
I guess to the point of there being no cemented pathway, and to the point of just be curious, pick up bits and pieces as you go along. A lot of people at the moment, presumably listening to this, they're probably interested in the space. They mightn't have much more than a toe in the water so far. What do you recommend for someone who wants to really take that next step and get a bit more involved? Is there anything they can be doing over the next 3, 6 months, 12 months to really build up a skill set and build up something that will be valuable?
We'll jump in and say a hobby data project is probably a good start, actually. Pick up a book. I've got the Gecko book, the O'Reilly Hands-On Machine Learning book. So just grab a stats book, grab a machine learning book. They've got step-by-step examples. Like, they assume nothing. It's like, all right, type this code in and I just have to follow it. But it's like, I don't have to know much. And I like there's like very easy, like hold my hand sort of books. Mm-hmm. And I'll have my own data project where it's like, I record the temperature and humidity data in the house, and then I go and apply the time series method on it where I can actually see when we've turned the air conditioner on, because it has a sharper drop in the humidity than what the normal curve is. So I've been able to apply some time series things. So grab a book, go and get some like very cheap IoT devices from Core Electronics. Go record some data with like a Raspberry Pi or something like that, and then start playing with that data, or see if you can get a fairly available data set and play. And like we've been talking about, try to answer your own questions for that play, Aiden.
And you can try and wrap that in some of the other more software engineering sort of skills that a business really has use for, like make a GitHub repo. Make sure you can show off some documentation skills in a README at the very least. Build a deployment pipeline. GitHub Actions is free for a lot of things now. If you can do these things, you can show that you're a disciplined worker as well, even though it's only your hobby. And also with a sort of a project that you may even only be daydreaming about, if you're keeping notes, making actions of what you could or should do, you know, that's something that you can talk to in an interview and start a career in the direction that you're daydreaming your project's about anyway.
And I'd just add in lastly, this is going to sound like a weird one, but and one not to bring up an interview and show anyone.
That's how you know it's going to be good.
Yeah. Get your bank statement. I don't know if all of the banks do it, but I'm sure they would. See if you can export your bank statements for a couple of months, as long as you can, and pop that in a program. I'm Power BI. So I actually did that with mine. And you can see a trend of where I've spent, where I've saved, what I've spent on, you know, and you can work with that grouping. And that's really how I came to understand how to use data, with data that I already innately knew. So this is money, you know, you know what you've spent money on. It's like, oh, there she goes again, getting a takeaway coffee. I would say, look at that. And that's the carrot for learning.
Yeah, I got to agree with that, because I started as when I first met my now wife, she's like, for a smart data person, you're not very good with your money. So it's like, that sort of like was the real punch in the gut. I'm like, right. So I exported all my bank statements, put them into Google Sheets. And it's like, I have the most pristine financial models and forecasting now as a result of her saying that. I was like, yeah, well, whenever you want to make a financial decision, it's like, straight to the sheet, and it's like that data is always feeding into it, and it's like being able to model that. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, there we go. I'm not so crazy.
Shamed into financial literacy. essentially. That's incredible. Oh, dear. Look, really, looping back to the event, when's it on? How do people attend? Where do they find the information? Let's assume absolutely zero knowledge. How does someone go from zero to attending and soaking up information?
So meetup.com, we'll put the link in the description. Hunter Data Analytics, we have, our event is every third Thursday, but we pre-fill the events so you can get notifications. Mm-hmm. And we're also on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. So we push notifications about what's coming up with that. And at the moment, we're just doing the digital format. The link is in the event. And we're just going to do chats and charts. So bring along your favorite chart. We'll have a chat about it. And I've got a few little projects that don't warrant like a half hour presentation, but it's just things that were interesting. So I've got a few of them that I'll sort of like kick it off and then give people a bit of inspiration to sort of bring their own projects. And we'll just keep doing that format and take community feedback from there. So,
sweet.
Perfect.
Sweet. Individually, how do people find you? Where is the information about what you do? If you've got a blog, if you've got a portfolio or something, where can people find that?
For me, Twitter and LinkedIn. I'll put links in the description.
Yep.
I'm not much of a social media person, unfortunately.
So we'll have to do a bit more digging.
Yeah, you can bump into me at the meetup.
Okay.
And I'm on LinkedIn, and that's about it.
Actually, to catch us, go to newie.com, get an invite for the Slack channel. Most of us are lurking in the data science channel. It's not always data science. Sometimes it's just memes, and sometimes it's interesting articles, but we all geek out on different data projects in there. It's good for in-between meetups. We just have like the asynchronous conversations or just interesting articles.
And again, with the inclusivity of the group, I stuck in a post in there saying, I would like a new computer, but I'm not sure what I'm looking for and I don't know what RAM means. Could someone please help? And everyone came on board and it was really nice. So yeah, don't think that not everyone's welcome.
The newest Slack group is a very good community.
Yeah.
Excellent. Look, I think that pretty well covers it for us. Thank you to all of you for taking time out of your day to chat for a decent length of time. I think this has gone really well. Thanks for listening. For you out there, catch you on the next one.